We're learning how to strengthen our immune system this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Along with exercise, sleep, and keeping stress in check, it's food that can help prime our bodies to perform at a higher level. But when I hear those catchy words about foods that can boost my immune system or strengthen it, I think maybe there are some shortcuts or at least better choices. How has your eating changed in the pandemic? Do you turn to a specific food group or do you whip up special recipes when you feel run down? Do you stress eat? How do you stop yourself? And what do you want to know about balancing your diet? We're at 800-642-1234 for all nutrition questions. Beth Olson is an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. Beth, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I was thinking of you last night when I made my gingered carrot soup, and that's my favorite ritual on a Sunday afternoon is to make, you know, soup, even in the summer. And gingered carrot is so aromatic, and the chopping of a pound and a half of carrots, super therapeutic. Do you have a favorite cooking ritual?
I don't think I have a favorite cooking ritual. What I really enjoy is when I have a little more time to cook when I'm rushed. I find that's very hard. And I think in these times, we've got both directions going and that some people have a little more time because they're home to make something that's their favorite. But then other people are working. They also have children at home that had to be homeschooled. And so they were more pressed for time. And it was probably even a little bit harder for them to make their favorite things.
So where do you go to find new recipes or where you do have some more time and you're in experimenting mode?
Yes, I will just take an ingredient that I know I have on hand that I want to use up sometimes or I have frozen, and I'll Google a recipe. Now, I try to be careful to look at the nutritional quality of that recipe that comes up. There are some recipes on health professional websites from the government, Choose My Plate, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. They tend on their sites to have recipes that are a little more along the healthy line. But I will often just use Google and then just take an assessment of is this something that I want to make? And I think it's a really good way to use up things that you have in your cupboard, unlike perhaps the old days when we had to pour through cookbook after cookbook.
Oh, yeah. But it's still so much fun to page through cookbooks. I love it.
Yeah. The pictures sometimes are worth it alone.
You know, this is a time when thousands of people are out of work. Do you have tips for how to eat healthy and save money on the grocery store tab? Because produce can be expensive. How do you keep your cost of serving down?
Yes, I think one of the big things, if people can do it, and again, some people are pretty busy, is to try to plan ahead. So I know some people aren't getting them right now, but in the local newspaper or sometimes online will be the deals of the week at the grocery store. So you can take a look and maybe plan around something you see that you like. Another is to find those recipes ahead of time and make sure you have all the ingredients so you don't get to the store and buy them all and then get home and find out you're missing something you need to make that recipe. I think also checking when you're in the store, you know, watch for the deals that are there. Try not to go hungry so you don't impulse buy something maybe that you wouldn't have purchased otherwise. I think a lot of those things would help people buy things that are both nutritious and try to stay within their budget. I would also say don't overlook things that are outside of the produce aisle. Sometimes there's a deal on frozen or canned fruits and vegetables. Sometimes there's a boxed ingredient that could really help you, if you're careful, read the food label, get something healthy that's a little quicker for those nights when you are busy and don't have time to, you know, cook a meal from scratch, as they say.
We're talking about how to eat to help our diets with Beth Olson. She's an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. You can join in. How have your eating habits changed during the coronavirus pandemic? Do you have a special food that you turn to when you start feeling a cold coming on? How balanced is your diet? We're at 800-642-1234. So, Beth, is there any magic fruit or vegetable or meal that can improve our immune system enough to ward off the coronavirus?
Yes, unfortunately, there's no magic bullet when it comes to nutrition. Our immune system is always there. It's kind of always surveilling, watching for infection, so that if something happens, a pathogen like a virus, like this coronavirus or a bacteria or something else enters our body in some way, we can fight it off. So what you really want to do is play the long game. You want to have yourself be as healthy as you can. And, of course, there's many other things involved. But nutrition would be one you could have a little bit more control over. So be as healthy as you can with nutrition, eating really a wide variety of foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, legumes and beans is an overlooked group often in our country. But eating all those, getting all the micronutrients you need, the energy you need, so that if something does happen, now you're ready to fight it off. You aren't starting in a place of lowered resistance right from the beginning.
So where should we start if we want to eat with the goal of helping to improve our immune system?
Yes, I think, although I just spoke about packaged foods and they play an important role in our diet, I would look at all of the whole foods that you can get. Again, in the produce aisle, dark colored, brightly colored fruits and vegetables, those are higher in antioxidants. That's what provides them the color. Of course, those same foods canned, we try to not have people get too much sugar in their canned fruit, for instance, or vegetables, again, brightly colored in the frozen aisle. I think those are a great place to start. And you can, one of the nice things is you can kind of look at it by color. So it isn't as, you know, I have to pick a carrot versus a sweet potato. They're both orange. Maybe try a new one or pick the ones that you like.
Yeah, you're big on eating a variety of foods. Why is variety so important?
Well, I think as much as we know about nutrition, we don't know everything. But we have watched people over long periods of time. People have been in studies, and these whole foods have been associated with those people being healthy. But since we don't know exactly what's in all of those foods that make for healthy outcomes, it's important to move among them and get a variety so that maybe one is a little bit higher in beta carotene or vitamin A, and maybe another is a little higher in vitamin C. And then there are antioxidants we just don't even know exactly what they do, but we know in general that they're healthy. So if you eat a wide variety, you're more likely to pick up all those important nutrients.
It kind of keeps your palate guessing, I would suppose, as to, you know, what's coming next.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, for parents feeding children, this has been one of the things that we found from the very beginning is that children offered the widest variety that you can, you know, that you're capable of getting and providing to them, tend to grow up eating those same kind of foods. If they see them over and over and over again and get a wide variety, they're more accepting of new foods when they get older, which is important as well.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I try to do that. I have kids at home, and some are really adventurous, and others won't venture further than the Cheerios. And so I run the gamut, and it's really hard to be able to, you know, put the food on the table and say, well, you know, there are Cheerios in the cupboard. How do you reconcile that?
Yes, well, I think that's a good strategy is you just keep doing it. You keep offering. If they don't eat so wonderfully one day, it's not a big deal. Even the next day, over time is what we're really focused on. And then I think, like you were talking about the Cheerios in the cupboard, or I used to say, you know, there's bread and there's peanut butter and jelly.
Yep.
so always having kind of something on hand that you know that they'll like. And so maybe you're picking a new vegetable for dinner, but you pick another one and put that on the table that they like as well. And sometimes just seeing it there after a while or having your parents try it can make a big difference.
We're getting nutrition tips through the hour with our guide, Beth Olson. She's in the UW-Madison Nutritional Sciences Department. What questions do you have about how foods affect your immune system? How do you get your kids to branch out and try new foods? Are there any new foods you want to incorporate into your diet? Let's talk about nutrition, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Beth Olson on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're learning how to improve our diet to benefit our immune system. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And let's bring supplements into this. Scientists are trying to figure out whether vitamin D offers some protection against COVID-19. In recent years, studies have found that taking vitamin D can lower the odds of developing respiratory infections like the cold and the flu, especially among people who are low on vitamin D. Do you take multivitamins or a supplement? What are you taking and why? Let's talk about healthy diets and your questions. 800-642-1234. We have UW-Madison nutritional sciences professor Beth Olson, who stays with us. Beth, we heard from Carl in Viroqua, called in, couldn't stay with us, but Carl wanted to know if leaky gut syndrome is a real thing. Is it a medical mystery or a scam?
Well, I think it's a real thing. I'm not a gastroenterologist or a doctor, so I don't want to say too much about it. I think it is a real thing, but I do think that people need to be diagnosed first. I would say that one of the things of the diets that I'm talking about, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, is they do help you in general maintain a healthy gut. And that's one of our immune systems is keeping things that, you know, that we would accidentally ingest or might be contaminated in something we touch from entering our body once it passes through our GI tract. So keeping a healthy gut's important part of the immune system. But there are people with GI diseases and they need to talk to their doctor and make sure that they're diagnosed. It's one area where people can have problems and self-diagnose and start taking measures that maybe aren't the best for them. And they should make sure they get diagnosed and get the proper treatment.
In the dairy aisle, we see all of these yogurts saying they're promoting probiotic health. What's going on there?
Yes, that's a class of foods, probiotics, or sometimes people use supplements that are meant to have the actual bacteria in them, unlike prebiotics, which promote the bacteria in our gut by feeding them. One has to look at the label carefully, and I would suggest perhaps just taking a look online to make sure that the bacteria they're saying are in the yogurt are actually in there and that mm-hmm. it can survive through your GI tract. Now, in general, yogurt is a great food for keeping your gastrointestinal tract healthy. So I would say in general, it's just a good food. But what they're trying to do is promote healthy bacteria in your gut. Now, for most of us, the bacteria in our gut are relatively stable. It's pretty hard to take in a new bacteria and displace the ones that are already there that we're feeding every day when we eat. But there may be other benefits to those bacteria that you ingest. They sometimes have other health benefits besides changing the existing bacteria in your gut.
And sometimes when I'm looking at those yogurt labels, I'm seeing a really high sugar content. Should I be concerned there?
Well, I would say in general, avoiding too much added sugar is a good idea. It's not necessarily that the sugar itself is going to do you in suddenly, but we only can take in so many calories, and if we take in a lot of those from added sugar, then we're displacing something else that might be more nutritious. If one has the ability to buy frozen, canned without sugar, or even fresh produce, if you can add that to a plainer yogurt, then you get a lot of benefit from the fruit that you don't get in yogurt that has fruit added. You get a lot more fiber. You're probably getting more micronutrients. So that would be one way to address not having so much added sugar if you don't want to just have the plain yogurt.
We're learning about eating to help benefit our immune system with Beth Olson. She's an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. You can join in. Do you have questions about nutrition? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Beth, we heard from Rick. Rick and Ruth called in and wanted to know about lectins, which they had heard are really bad for us. What are lectins?
I don't think lectins are bad for you. Maybe it's, I'm not sure what context they heard about it.
Okay.
But they are something that your gut can ferment, a kind of indigestible carbohydrate. It could be that they heard that because of some type of supplement. And so it is a good thing to remember that when we talk about the components in food, dietary fiber is one of these. There's psyllium fiber and wheat bran fiber, and there's a lot of indigestible carbohydrates in foods which qualify as fiber. the best benefits from those come within the food context themselves. Once we start to isolate them out and maybe try to take them as supplements, it's not as clear that they're always as healthful. Now, a lot of those are used in processed foods because they provide some attribute to the food we need. For instance, sometimes they're used because they kind of hold water together as thickeners. Mm. So when you think of something like salad dressing that is low fat or non-fat, it's then, you know, quite water-based and would be quite thin. So they'll put in a little bit of a dietary fiber to help thicken it. Now, often people read those terms on the label and they get quite concerned because it sounds chemical, but actually it's just a dietary fiber. It may not be that helpful. It's not in that context. It's not in a great amount, but it isn't harmful.
In terms of fiber, where should we be looking for fiber in our diets when we come to the table? What would you suggest?
Of course, once again, I'm going to go with those fruits and vegetables because of all the antioxidants. But I would also add whole grains. And so many of us, you know, myself included in my early years, you know, I got white rice and a bit of white bread. And then I was fortunate. My mother was very interested in nutrition and began to offer whole grains. So brown rice, whole wheat bread, oatmeal. Those are all excellent sources of fiber. They also, although they're not usually brightly colored, offer other micronutrients, vitamins, and some great minerals. But the other place that we neglect, I think, in the American diet, which is really a great source, is legumes, beans, dried peas. Not only do they have fiber, they're some of our better sources in the plant world of protein, which is also important for our immune system, that we have enough protein, but offers you an alternative, say, to other sources that often we come to rely on, like meat.
And they can also be pretty low cost, pretty economical.
Yes, and they can be dried or sometimes canned, so they also can be very shelf stable. It's a easier way to perhaps sometimes to add protein to a meal. I just bought a bunch of beans in bulk at the store, and I will sometimes take rice and add black beans, or I'll put garbanzo beans on a salad. So it's a way to add also a little bit of variety to your food, even if you don't want to sit down and, you know, eat a big plate of them. It's another way to do it.
Let's take a call now. Jay is with us from Two Rivers. Hi, Jay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Regarding purchasing yogurt with live and active cultures, most varieties, as you had mentioned before, have sugar, but there is more varieties now available with a little bit of sugar and artificial sweeteners. Would that be a better choice for diabetics than consuming the higher sugar variety?
Yeah, they are a good choice for people who are trying to limit sugar. I personally don't have a big issue with artificial sweeteners that some people do. I think some people just think they're artificial, use something natural. But I think they add some sweetness to some foods that let people select those foods, and they can be very healthy foods, again, like yogurt, and lets them keep their sugar and their calorie content down a little, but the food still tastes good. And I know I mentioned, you know, adding fresh fruit and the like, but also if you have a yogurt that's a bit pre-sweetened, you know, it's quick, it's easy to go, you could take it for lunch, you know, you can grab it out for a snack. So sometimes we're using some things to help our foods not only be nutritious, but to be a little bit more convenient.
When I think of artificial sweetener, I immediately think of diet sodas. How should we approach soda?
So again, the main problem that exists for us generally is that people eat too many or drink too many sugar-sweetened beverages, not just soda, but things like sweet tea. And that provides a lot of sugar and a lot of calories with nothing else beneficial. So for people to maybe substitute some artificially sweetened beverages for regular beverages could be a big improvement. Now, at some point, of course, water hopefully is safe for most people and generally is free out of their tap. that would also be a good choice. We also want to make sure for children that they have some source of calcium in their diet from milk or other beverages that you could substitute, like fortified soy drinks. So we also want to make sure that any kind of soda or soda pop isn't your only beverage.
Yeah, and certainly, I mean, even taking your water and adding a lemon or a wedge of a fruit to it can also give it a little bit of pep.
Yes, exactly. I think that's, you get, you know, maybe a little bit of nutrition from the fruit, but it also just provides a little bit of flavor, a little bit more variety without adding any more calories.
We're spending the hour on nutrition and how to boost our immune response. UW-Madison nutrition specialist Beth Olson is our guide. So what foods make you feel better? Does stress seem to throw your diet out of whack? I eat bowls of Kellogg's cornflakes when I'm stressed. They're crispy and sweet. So why the heck wouldn't I just reach for an apple instead? It seems so simple. Let's talk about the ups and downs of our diet. 800-642-1234. We'll be back for more on nutrition with Beth Olson after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about what nutrition has to do with our body's ability to fight off illness this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. During the pandemic, we may be prone to feeling anxious, feeling fearful, stressed, socially isolated. As I prepared for the segment, I downed nearly a whole box of what are called Good Thins. Have you had them? They were on sale. I had a coupon. The box said they're rice snacks and the flavor is simply salt. No way to eat just a handful. Do you do this too? Do you down a box of something and say, what just happened? Join in with your questions about diet, nutrition, and difficult times. We're at 800-642-1234. Beth Olson is an associate professor in UW-Madison's Nutritional Sciences Department. She stays with us. Let's take another call now. John is joining us from Glendale. Hi, John.
Hi. The reason I was calling is I was wondering what the latest news is on decaffeinated coffee being as healthy as regular coffee. I use the Crystal instant coffee. It's decaffeinated. I was wondering if I'm getting as many benefits from that as I would from caffeinated coffee.
Yeah, I'm not aware that there are benefits specific to decaf coffee. I think if caffeine bothers somebody, then that's a great alternative. Also, our dietary guidelines provided for the United States generally talks about, you know, 3-4 cups of coffee a day are safe, that much caffeine. So I think for some people, you know, caffeine helps perk them up, gives them energy. But for other people, it's bothersome, and having decaffeinated coffee would be a great alternative.
John, thanks for the question. We also heard from William, who emailed saying that William's read that fasting for 3 days can regenerate a person's immune system. Is there anything to that?
Now, I have not heard that. I'm not sure where it came from. There are people who have used fasting fairly successfully for at least short-term weight loss. This is kind of a new area getting a bit more press in the past. It's not for 3 days. It's generally for, you know, a limited part of the day as a way to simply remove calories without, you know, thinking a lot about it. Our immune system actually needs a lot of micronutrients. It needs energy. So I don't think that a 3-day fast is probably the best thing to do right now. I realize, of course, some people do shorter amounts for religious reasons, and again, some people are using it for weight loss. Like any of these, I would just make sure to check in with your doctor before you do it in case you are deficient in any nutrients or you are taking any medications or you have another condition related to, say, how your blood sugar is regulated, that you want to be careful about restricting your calories so severely.
I'm a snacker, Beth, and I'm wondering, what do you think about having little meals throughout the day versus three, you know, larger meals?
Yes, there was research done. I'm not sure how much recently, but, you know, certainly this was of interest in the past, and I'd read about it where people had some better outcomes by having smaller meals throughout the day. One of the things that we tend to see, though, is that works better in a controlled setting where they're being given these several small meals during the day compared to a group given, you know, fewer larger meals. For many people in a free living situation, it's a little harder to make sure that those snacks don't start to either increase in size or decrease in nutrient content so that they, you know, can end up over time just eating a lot of less nutritious, more calories in food over the course of a day. So it's something you really need to be careful about.
Yeah, you mean that pantry door with all the boxes of Triscuits there?
Exactly, yeah.
You can go overboard?
Yep.
Shocking.
Yep. Nice and crunchy. And I think, you know, sometimes when you're snacking, it seems a bit deceiving. You think, well, I just have this tiny bowl of whatever, and then there's another tiny bowl and another tiny bowl. And sometimes we would benefit even with snacks, I think, which I can't say that I'm as good at this as I should be, but just taking out a quantity, putting it in the bowl, putting away the package, and then maybe sitting down at the table with it instead of kind of the mindless eating that we sometimes get with snacking.
Yeah, and so much mindless eating when I'm, you know, at home, working from home, and computer up in front of me, and your hand is reaching over to whatever that you just pulled out of the cupboard.
Yes, exactly. And I think sometimes, too, we have to try to step back a second when we're heading that way and think, am I really hungry or am I bored? Mm. Or have I been snacking so much while I'm home, I've kind of lost track of what hungry feels like? Or I know sometimes I just try to look at the clock and think, okay, it's 4. I'm going to be eating dinner soon. Can I wait just a little bit longer, or do I need to get those pretzels out?
Yeah, so being really mindful of how you're doing at the moment. You know, Beth, sometimes when people feel a cold coming on, they take a lot of vitamin C. Where are supplements in this conversation?
Yeah, so that's a great question. In general, you know, for maintaining our health, including our immune system, we would tell people a wide variety of foods. Now, there are nutrients particularly important for the immune system. If we have a particular eating pattern, for some reason, either we just can't tolerate a food, we just don't like it, we have a certain condition, older adults, for instance, have trouble absorbing vitamin B12, then a supplement might be important. Again, I always tell people, talk to your doctor, because they can be side effects of these nutrients. They can interfere with medications, so you want to be careful. Also, I think people should be careful about taking large doses of a single supplement. Then they're more likely to have side effects. Some nutrients are absorbed, a group can be absorbed with the same mechanism. So if you take a big dose of one, you may actually be out-competing absorption of the other. So you want to be careful. If people are really worried, I think a pretty safe bet would be a multivitamin, because then you're going to get all of the nutrients, but you're also going to get them in a bit smaller amounts, not these mega doses. There's really such limited evidence that taking big doses of single nutrients helps people do better with their immune response. Where that really comes from is studies in which, often with animals, but sometimes with people where they're deficient, and so then their immune system isn't working well, and adding back the proper amount helps their immune system. But that's different than adding lots of extra vitamins or minerals on top of what we already are needing and consuming.
We're talking with Beth Olson. She's an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. We're talking about nutrition, diet, supplements. You can join in with your questions. Are you taking vitamin C? Maybe you have a favorite food for fiber. What questions do you have about how foods affect your immune system? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Beth, how does water fit into this? You know, we know water is important to drink throughout the day, but how does it impact our immune system function?
Yeah, so water's important as long as you're hydrated. This is another one, and you know, most people could probably test this out themselves. If they drank, you know, much more water than they're used to, or you know, typically do in a day, they're probably just going to be in the bathroom more. But many times we don't drink enough water, and so having more water allows everything that's in your body to be working well, allows your blood to circulate. Of course, your blood needs to circulate in order to have your immune system's cells moving around, looking for any possible invader and fighting it off. So water is just crucial to moving everything around in our body through our blood system and other things and keeping everything working well. So we don't want to walk around, you know, kind of chronically somewhat dehydrated. I remember years ago, this happened to me. I had a blood test for something and things looked wrong and I was panicked. And the doctor said, you know what, you're a little dehydrated. That's why your values are this way. And I got busy and I wasn't thinking about it and I didn't drink enough water.
And certainly if you drink a lot of caffeinated beverages, that can also deplete your water. Is that true?
Well, this is kind of true and not true.
Okay.
So our body actually tends to adapt pretty well to the amount of caffeine we consume. So for me, if I drink 3 cups of coffee, you know, throughout the morning, that won't be dehydrating. If I suddenly drink 8 cups, then I might start to have a problem. Personally, for me, if I suddenly consume more caffeine than I'm used to, I feel my heart feels like it's a little bit racing and I feel a little shaky. I think the caffeine effects itself, aside from the water effects, are probably going to hit us harder. I think a group we want to be careful about is children. So I'm used to drinking 3 cups of coffee. I'm used to drinking 1 cup of coffee, but a child may not be. And, you know, with the trend to, you know, for kids to stop by Starbucks or other places, we have to be careful they're hydrating in a good way and aren't suddenly consuming more caffeine than they're used to.
Let's look at antioxidants. They're supposed to help give our immune system a boost. What are antioxidants?
Yeah, so just our normal processing in our body, the way we metabolize our nutrients, causes us to get some compounds in our body that are damaged in a way. And so they call those oxidized compounds. So antioxidants stop that. So they're kind of a scavenger in our body, if you will, kind of patrolling around and taking care of the damage that we have in our body. So they're really important to our health. There's been a suggestion, some research supporting that they help prevent some of our chronic diseases, which are thought to be from some damage happening in our body. And so they're important in our immune system for many ways. They provide many functions. But one of the things that they do is our body fighting off an invader of some kind, a virus or a bacteria. In doing so, we cause some damage to our own body, some oxidation. And so those antioxidants help protect our own tissues from our body needing to attack, you know, and get rid of this invader.
UW-Madison nutrition specialist Beth Olson is our guide on how to boost our immune response with the food choices we make. Have you overhauled a favorite family recipe and made it more nutritious? How are you revamping comfort foods like mac and cheese? Do you prefer to take your fruits as smoothies? What do you throw in the blender this morning? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. We'll talk more in a minute with Beth Olson. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kay Darcher Kent. A new survey by the consultancy firm PwC finds that COVID-19 and the recession are driving changes in shopping behavior. More than 2 in 5 respondents said they will not stop loading their pantries until COVID-19 is fully resolved. 2/3 of respondents said they're reluctant to eat at restaurants. Consumer sentiment to bear in mind as we open our pantry doors and discuss diet this hour. Still time for your questions, 800-642-1234. We have UW-Madison nutritional sciences specialist Beth Olson, who stays with us. Let's take another call now. Nancy is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Nancy.
Hello on this somewhat gloomy day. My comment has to do with the fact that I am not right now, but I did for over 30 years, that's 30 years, take one or another of the proton pump inhibitors. And I'm now strongly feeling that I have permanently turned off the acid secretors in my stomach, and therefore I'm totally lacking any acid to help the absorption of food nutrients. I'm especially worried about B12 and vitamin D, because I understand that some percentage of acid is required to absorb those two particular nutrients.
Nancy, thanks. Beth, start out by telling us what are proton pump inhibitors?
Oh, goodness. So it's a medication, and I'm not a physician, but they have helped with stomach acid secretion. They used to be only by prescription, and now you can get them over the counter. I think there's always a caution with those about long-term use, and something one has to work out with your doctor, because of course, if you do really need them, you can be very uncomfortable without them. I don't know about the long-term effects of them. That would be something to ask the doctor. But we do need some stomach acid to help us separate some of the nutrients out of our foods. So one way that we can address that, and I'm thinking in particular for B12, which I'm more familiar with, is to take the B12 as a synthetic supplement. So we have more trouble as we get older. Some adults have trouble getting B12 from their food because it's bound up and the acid can't release it. And so they either take a supplement or most of our ready-to-eat cereals are often some of the cereals, some of them like oatmeal, and our cereal grains, breads, are fortified with B12. Also, many of our foods for this caller are supplemented with vitamin D. And so oftentimes those fortified nutrients are a little bit more available to us than the ones found naturally in food, which get to be bound up by different things in our food.
Yeah, and how do you make sure that that B12 doesn't just go straight through your system? How do you capture that?
Well, your body will capture it. One of the ways it does it is with these having a good, healthy intestinal tract. So we're kind of back to that. So eating a wide variety of foods that will feed the healthy bacteria in your gut will help keep your gut healthy so that it can absorb nutrients better. Now, there are specific medical conditions, again, where somebody might need more help than they're going to just get from diet alone, but that would be something they would know, hopefully, and deal with their doctor. But I think keeping your gut healthy is the way. And then what's going to happen is if you're, especially for things like the B vitamins where they're extra, if you're getting an extra from what you need, those are water soluble and they'll just be excreted in your urine if you get too much. So it also doesn't make sense to try to take too much in, because if you get over what you need, we often say you have expensive pee, meaning you just end up getting rid of it anyway. And while we're actually talking about the topic, I just wanted to throw back in, because an earlier caller asked about lectin, and I apologize. I thought they were talking about a dietary fiber. Fiber is a big interest of mine, if you can't tell already. And lectin is actually a carbohydrate, a protein that binds carbohydrate. It's not a carbohydrate itself. And I understand that the caller may be concerned about it. It is in the beans and legumes, which I was really promoting. But when we cook it, it deactivates it. And so it's not usually a problem, because people don't usually chew on raw beans, you know, here in the States. We cook them. They're just not edible otherwise. So they're still a wonderful food to eat. I would not be concerned about eating that. And another way to feed your gut, to protect yourself against any pathogens that might come in that way.
Nancy, thanks for the call. We're talking with Beth Olson. She's an associate professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. Beth, let's talk about alcohol for a moment. How does drinking alcohol affect our immune system?
You know, It depresses our immune system. Now, exactly how it does that, I'm not sure. One of the things definitely over the years we've seen with alcohol is it displaces other nutrients. If you're drinking a lot of alcohol, you're displacing nutrients that you need to be healthy. It does seem to depress your immune system in the short run if you drink a lot, like a binge drinking episode, but then over time it just seems to cause damage in our body that depresses our ability to fight off infection. And I think this is just true of many of these factors: smoking, lack of sleep. It's just all of these things contribute in some way to our overall health. And once our overall health is compromised, our immune system is a part of that. And it is also depressed and then unable to fight off an infection.
Oh, it has almost a compounding effect on the rest of our body.
Oh, yes. Yeah. There's some health benefits to light alcohol drinking that have been shown. And, the U.S. dietary guidelines often say something like, if you choose to drink, do so in moderation. So not saying you can't. For many people in these times of stress, it's a way to relax. I know a glass of wine in the evening can really, taste good and make you relax. But we want to be careful that we're not crossing over into consuming too much.
So can we just touch on a moment any bad foods that we should stay away from if we want to really help our immune system and not hinder it? What should we stay away from?
So I think there isn't a single food we need to stay away from, but I would watch foods, again, high in added sugars because they're displacing other nutrients, very high in salt because a lot of salt can bother some people and cause hypertension. I think we want to be careful when we're choosing boxed foods, processed foods, canned foods, that we look at the label and among the selections you're making, pick the best choice. So if you're picking a cereal, can you look on the side and look how much fiber it has and pick one that has a little bit more than the other? I think the excess calories is something we really have to watch. People have perhaps seen in the news that obesity is a risk factor for bad outcomes. We don't want to get so focused on weight. We want to be more focused on being active, getting enough sleep, eating healthy. But eating a lot of processed foods is going to be more contributing to weight gain than eating a lot of, bell pepper for your snack. We just tend not to overeat as much of the whole fresh foods as we do something that's really highly processed, like the Triscuits.
Yeah. And as a researcher, are there, you're still learning about our immune systems as it relates to nutrition. Are there any studies in the pipeline that you're really interested in watching what happens?
It's not a research area that I'm as heavily involved mm-hmm. with. I think one of the areas that I'm certainly very interested in is what type of diets promote this gut function. So we've heard, microbiome a lot, and there's just fascinating work going on and a lot of work going on, but it's very complicated. Everybody's gut is very individual to them. It's individual. People in a region have a more similar microbiome than another region. So it's a very hard area to study. So a lot of it's exciting, and I'm excited to see what comes down the line. But right now, we just don't know that much more beyond these whole healthy foods are great to keep this bacteria in the gut healthy. I think I'm also interested because I started out, doing dietary fiber and gut research years ago when people kind of were looking at fiber as something, we didn't really need that much of. And so I'm so excited that we're finding out that it really is important.
Beth, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I had a lovely time.
Beth Olson, Associate Professor in the Nutritional Sciences Department at UW-Madison. If you missed any part of this conversation, stream it later this morning at WPR.org/mornings. Coming up, it's the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.